Welcome to the Story Discovery Podcast. I'm your host, J.W. McAteer. Coming up, you'll hear a new work from our free online publication, Etched Onyx Magazine. Please join me and co-host T.J. Cedar after the reading, when we talk with the author about their work and all things writing and otherwise. This podcast and all related materials are a production of Onyx Publications. All works, stories, and poems are copyright 2023, all rights reserved. On today's show, we have a selection of poetry written by Charlotte Pruitt and narrated by J.W. McAteer. Settle in and enjoy. Dandelions to the Wind. We sit clumped and grass-stained, blowing dandelion dust to the wind. In flower crowns we dream. We are anywhere but here. We are princesses in towers, pirates overseas. We don't see its struggle, a lone seed torn from its family, searching wildly for somewhere to land, somewhere to grow, a weed against a windstorm. We see a dandelion to the wind, wafting weightless above playgrounds. The Botanical Park. Housed our first kiss and an Easter picnic of fruits and flowers. You lay face up in my lap, petals fallen on your grin. He loves me, he loves me not. He loves me. Months later, it was eclipsed by memories darker, 3 a.m. Security noting tattered shirts, buttons fallen to the dirt. They pretend to believe our lies. We're not drunk or crying or mad. We're sober-minded and he loves me, officer. It's not what you think. He loves me. All the things I meant to say fell silent, like nothing, like petals in a pile. Not. Her green thumb. She's more thorns than flowers, more weeds than moss. She kneels dirt-kneed in her garden with matching watering can and gloves. Her chives have grown thick to cut for tonight's supper, and her morning glories bloom so blue you forget their impermanence. Daylilies last just a day, she says. So we pick them as a centerpiece and hope. The petals hang densely to hide those since browned. So we forget the decay underneath. We bury seeds in her garden and cross calloused fingers. They sprout and survive through the dirt. They will, she says. That's just Mother Nature. Mother's nature. Facades love over hurt. It's not you, it's the way leaves redden in autumn and somehow look beautiful as they fall. Children play in neatly raked piles of technicolor death. What if leaves just crumbled, leaving the carcass they once clung to? No season of transformation, no time to prepare. What if one day, standing in the place of a trunk once blooming ultraviolet, with no warning, red leaves or red flags, there's just me. Cruel summer. Summertime meant my yard transformed to lawn. In springtime, turned to dust. In the drought, wilted with the weather. She spent months thriving, only to wither away when summertime came home. Cruel summer returned just to burn her, to make her realize she's dirt and beg for his storm. You just listened to Dandelions to the Wind and Other Poems, written by Charlotte Pruitt, and we have Charlotte on the show today to talk about this wonderful poetry and writing life in general. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Well, we're super excited to have you on. Normally, we would be joined by TJ Cedar, our co-host, but he is majorly under the weather right now, so I'm just flying solo.
No, that's all right. I'm bummed, though, that he's not joining us, only because we're both in Australia, so that would have been fun to banter about.
I know. Well, maybe he'll reach out via email or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so one of the first things we do when we start off is just have you give our listeners a little bit of background about, you know, who is Charlotte Pruitt? How did you come to writing? Whatever you want to tell us.
Yeah, well, I'm Charlotte Pruitt, as you mentioned, and I'm a writer, as you know, from my poetry, but that extends beyond poetry. I also worked as a journalist and went to journalism school. So it's a bit funny being on this end of the interviews because I feel like usually, you know, I'm asking the questions. Exactly. Or writing the podcast script. So it's cool being interviewed on this podcast. So thank you again. And more recently, I'm currently working at a creative advertising agency. So I'm a copywriter as well. So yeah, just writing really in all forms.
Okay, good.
Professionally and personally. So yeah, that's nice. I'm originally from Boston, so in the U.S., but as I just mentioned, I live in Australia now. I moved here about 4 years ago, or a bit more now, because I was backpacking and fell in love with an Australian guy, like an absolute cliche.
And that's great.
Yeah, and now I'm here to stay, and it's been great, you know, kind of having both Australian and American influences in my writing, although it's been hard to, you know, give up my Z's and transfer them to S's and a lot of words.
Interesting.
Change the O to OU and all of that. But yeah, I absolutely love it here. And it's been really inspiring for my writing as well.
That's great. Yeah, you don't have an accent at all.
No, I don't have a Boston nor an Australian accent. I think I just have a straight down the line American, maybe a bit of California because that's where I went to university. But
right. Oh, that's very good. Great. Well, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of things that I might come back to here in a few minutes, but we do like to talk about the poetry first.
Absolutely.
There were a couple of lines in here that I just really enjoyed, and I'll probably point those out in a minute. But I guess, can you give us a little bit of a description about the meaning behind some of these or what inspired you to write them? You don't have to go into what it means for each poem, but if you want to, we're welcome
to hear
it.
I mean, I think it's very important as a writer to be vulnerable. So, you know, I'm happy to discuss some of these vulnerabilities, at least as they apply to me. I don't want to, you know, air anyone else's dirty laundry, I guess, if they inspired some of it.
Okay.
Also, thank you so much for your kind words about my poetry. When you initially accepted them, you said that they were like an action movie and that that's very rare for poetry. And I joke a lot that I write poetry for Gen Z, which is my generation, because it is short, it is fast paced. It's, you know, I think a lot of classic poets would roll in their graves to hear me compare it to like a TikTok, but I do feel like it is kind of comparable in a way that I write what I'm drawn to. And so I think that the kind of pacing of my poetry is, I guess, more of a gateway type style for my generation.
Right, right.
Yeah, I just really appreciate you picking up on that and appreciating that.
Sure. Well, that was a question I didn't give you in advance, but I was going to ask because you have a lot of lines, I guess.
Yes, one word lines. Yeah.
One word lines, I mean. Right, right. Yeah. But it moves along, it pulls you in. It's fun.
Thank you. Yeah. And I always try to have some sort of punch at the end or something like that, just because those are the poems that when I read them, I think about them afterward forever. So yeah, I just try to emulate, obviously, what I like.
Sure.
But in relation to your initial question about the meanings behind my poems, so Dandelions to the Wind is kind of that, based upon that notion that everyone wants what they can't have, or everyone's always trying to be someone or somewhere that they aren't. So there's multiple layers of that in this poem. There's the kids kind of, in a way, wishing that they were the dandelion floating above where they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think most kids, you know, pretend to be something else, like a princess, or are always just wanting to grow up faster and always just wishing they can leave where they are. But then it kind of switches to the perspective of that dandelion seed, and the dandelion seed would rather be where they are, you know, rooted on the ground. And that part in particular is kind of inspired by my move to Australia, and that it was a really harrowing time. But I think from an outsider's perspective, it probably looked like, oh my gosh, she's moved to Australia and having the best time. That's so cool.
Right, sure.
And elements of that were very, very true. But also it was so hard to be separated from my family during COVID, making new friends as an adult, all of these things. So it's just kind of that duality of the perceptions between the two parties, I guess, is what this poem
is
about.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I would say I've definitely felt the strong nature theme in all of these.
Absolutely. And I definitely don't only write about nature. I just like to submit selections of poems that feel really cohesive. So I tried to keep the nature theme in these poems for Onyx, but that isn't the only thing I write about.
Yeah, sure. Well, and I would say, even like the dandelion poem, the meaning is not nature related, at least in a lot of them at all. But you use that as a metaphor or a way to access the, I don't know, the brutality or whatever it is that you're trying to express. Yeah.
Yes, I think I use nature as a vehicle because it's often viewed as so delicate, and I kind of play on that fragility and contrast it to a darkness in a way that I find interesting. The botanical park is another one that it's also comparing two situations, one that was beautiful, one that was not so beautiful, that occurred at the same beautiful natural location. And I think using kind of the petals falling and the falling out of love, and there are a lot of metaphors there that do kind of contrast the light with the dark and the nature with the less beautiful.
Right, right. Well, this one in particular is, I mean, I debated whether that would require a trigger warning or not. You know, it seems like it's a spousal abuse, you know, so.
Yes, luckily. Not spousal. I'm not married, and this was a past relationship. But yes, these are definitely based in experiences that I've had, unfortunately. And it's just kind of about, you know, the falling out of love and moving on. And I'm glad to be past that. But, you know, something I do frequently get inspired by is dark times. And I think people are always shocked because I'm a very kind of bubbly person, but my writing is very sad. But I think it's just, writing is a way for me to encapsulate that moment and that feeling and hopefully leave it on the page. It's kind of a cathartic experience for me. And then I can, you know, be happy in my real life, I guess.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because I like to write a lot of semi-dark things also. Mm-hmm. A lot of people die in the things that I write, but it's not about the death. It's about the struggle and the emotional impact. And it's a way to experience that as you're writing it, right?
Absolutely.
And maybe even re-experience in some cases. And mm-hmm. you are free from it in some ways, I guess, as a result.
Yes. And I think it's almost like exposure therapy in a way, that the more you experience something, the more you write about something that was traumatic, the better you heal from it. You're not boxing it away and keeping it bottled up and repressed.
Right.
It's reliving it to heal it, hopefully. And I think that there's growth from that, which is another reason that I love to use kind of the nature theme, because of course, growing and plants and all of that. So yes, I think a lot of my work is sad, but I hope there is some optimism in at least most of the poems.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, you're allowed to write about whatever you want.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Then what about her green thumb? So this one, this line just blew me away. And I just want to mention it. Her morning glories bloom so blue, you forget their impermanence. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So tell me about that. Tell us about that poem.
That's so lovely. Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to say for the record that this is not about my mom. My poor mother might get some bad press from this.
But I didn't necessarily think that, though, actually.
Okay, good. I'm glad. But yes, this is an observation poem made about kind of from the perspective of someone I know and about her mom, who cares more about the perception of their relationship than their actual relationship. And a lot of the imagery I actually did borrow from my own mom, just because, you know, my mom does grow chives, she does have morning glories, and those were just kind of borrowed to exemplify this feeling that I had watching someone else's relationship. And yeah, this poem was actually just initially inspired by Mother Nature versus Mother's Nature, and that, in addition to darkness, is another big inspiration for me. I'll just write lots of words down that I love, or if I'm reading a book and there's a vocab word I don't know that I think's interesting, or just a word that I don't use frequently that I think's cool, like slipknot, haberdashery. These are two words that this week I've added to my list. I just think that they're cool words, and certain phrases get me excited like that. So that's mm-hmm. where this poem kind of stemmed from, was just that
interesting
little wordplay. And then mm-hmm. I thought of a scenario that related to that exactly and wrote a poem from there.
Well, you know, I read that Mother's Nature before and didn't quite get the juxtaposition of it. But yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, great.
That's really cool. I had a buddy in a job like 30 years ago who wrote newsletters, and he would like find some strange word and like figure out a way to get it into an article.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's kind of fun because words are beautiful.
Words are beautiful. I'm such a logophile. That's really my main attraction to poetry is the, you know, verbiage in the words. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's where most of my poems start.
Very cool. All right. So it's not you. This is another fun one.
Yes. So this one is currently, at least, what I feel like is my most vulnerable of this selection, just because this is about my current relationship, but not in a bad way necessarily, more just in a self-reflective way. I wrote this to my current partner about kind of my shortcomings and my anxiety. I wrote this on an autumn day, or on a fall day, like we say in the US. And I was looking up at the trees and just thinking in a literary way. I don't really necessarily think in poems all the time, but I was just kind of envious in a way that people celebrated and romanticized when trees break down. But obviously when I break down, I don't do it as gracefully, and I don't get that same grace from people.
Right, right.
And I just thought that was an interesting comparison of those two experiences. So then in my relationship, it was kind of saying to my partner, like, will you still love me when I don't have these pretty colors to accompany my breakdown? And, you know, when you see underneath, what will happen then? So obviously it's not you, it's a common kind of breakup phrase.
Yes.
And I certainly was not breaking up with my partner, and I never, ever planned to. But it's just that idea of, you know, if something were to happen, if we were to break up, I think it would be because of me and my fear that you won't love me forever. So it's just kind of that very vulnerable.
Yeah. You know, well, thank you for sharing that. That's
no problem.
Well, I see. I love to get the backstory on some of these things, because you you know, you put your own backstory in it, you know, when you read it.
Of course,
it,
and
it's, yeah, it's fascinating to hear. I do like the, and now it has a somewhat different meaning. I'm going to have to go back and read some of these
No,
again.
That's okay. You're welcome to put your own interpretation on it. This is where I came from. Yeah.
Sure, sure. But it's good to know. But I did like when you basically talk about a trunk once blooming ultraviolet with no warning, red leaves or red flags. I just thought, it's so nicely done. I'll stop gushing. I just really enjoyed these.
No, please. I love the gushing. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, Cruel Summer.
Yes. And lastly, Cruel Summer. So my sister, I showed her these and she said, like, was this inspired by the Taylor Swift song? Because Taylor Swift has a new song called Cruel Summer that's dominating the radio. And no, it was not. It was written prior to that. Although she's a beautiful writer as well, of course. But this was about a previous relationship from many, many years ago where the person only came home in the summer and where most people really look forward to the summer and it's their favorite time. It was kind of my worst time just because this person kind of consumed my life and all my energy. So it's, again, just kind of that juxtaposition between the light and the dark that we spoke about earlier. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's kind of summer and winter, I guess.
Yeah. Fascinating. Would this have been in Boston then?
Yes. Yeah. This was back home. This is when I was in high school. So a long time ago. But, you know, as I said, sometimes I get inspired by little words or little thoughts. And then I kind of think of a situation to connect with them. Not really the other way around. I don't always start with an experience. I kind of find an experience that meets what I want to say sometimes, which is, I think, different than how other writers might operate. But works for me.
Yeah. That is interesting. So talk about that a little bit more. I was just interviewing someone for a flash fiction piece, and they basically said they come up with sort of an image and then just go with that, and whatever comes out, comes out. So is on the poetry side, is it something similar when you say you like a phrase just trying to follow?
Yeah. So a phrase, like as I mentioned earlier, kind of the mother nature versus mother's nature, or certain word associations, or another one from my first poetry book that I published in 2020 was circadian rhythm, cicadas in rhythm. And it was about sleeping and the summer beetles, the cicadas, kind of singing a song as you fall asleep. That one's called Mexican Lullaby. But yes, just kind of phrases or structures that I want to try. And then I think of an experience that I haven't written about yet, or just a new way of thinking about an experience that I have already written about, and just trying to fit an experience kind of to the verbiage that I want to use, I guess.
That is interesting. That is different.
Yes. I don't always go about it that way. There are times when, especially when I write about social issues and there's certain political issues that I write about, those tend to just, you know, fall out of my brain, I guess. I don't plan, those I don't have, you know, certain structures that I want to use. I just find that I write those in like 15 minutes, and they're some of my favorite works because they are about certain experiences that I'm living in the moment, and then I am really passionate about them. But sometimes when I'm hitting a bit of a dry spell, I work it the other way.
Wow. Now, so do you go back and do a lot of editing on these, or do they come out fully formed? How does that work?
Some of them, yes, and some of them, no. So my first poetry book, which I published a couple years ago, was 8 years. You know, I think most people's like first book, first album, first whatever is just from many, many years of their writing.
And what's that called again for our listeners?
The Seamstress.
Right.
You can find it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud.
You should be.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Because it was 8 years of writing, there is kind of a diversity in the styles that I use, the approaches. And so a lot of those were less edited just because I wanted to just get my book out. I just thought, you know what, it's time. Yep. It was during COVID and I just thought, you know, now's the time if I'm ever going to do it. So I think I had potentially less care in those, but I still am really, really proud of them. Yeah. But because I didn't have a style, so there was nothing that I was necessarily trying to write to. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, as you said, kind of the short, fast-paced style is what I find really works for me and what I find inspires me. So I think I'm doing more editing now than I used to, just from experience and because I think I found a bit more of a niche for myself.
Yeah. So are you working on another poetry book then?
I am, yes. I don't have a, you know, deadline or anything for myself. Of course, I'm working and doing different creative extracurriculars as well. I just completed a creative course that was a few months of intense work. So I definitely don't want to use up all my creative juices all the time. But yes, I am working on a second book and I have a fair few poems that I'm ready to put into that.
Oh, that's great. So poetry, you mentioned, I think at the start of the show, do you do other writings? Do you short stories or you have a novel in the works or anything?
No. So not in terms of novels or short stories, but I worked as a journalist. I went to journalism school and I do copywriting. So for websites, social media, EDMs, all those sorts of things. So more kind of, I suppose, corporate or professional writing. But, you can add creative flair in there. And I definitely do.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So, yes. Those are the ones that do the best. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And just for our listeners and for me, since I don't know what that means, what's EDM?
Oh, it's a newsletter, an email newsletter.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Email direct marketing or something?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there you go.
Sounds good. All right. Well, so poetry then. Do you remember the first poem that kind of set you down this path? Or why would you say you landed on poetry?
Yes. William Carlos Williams. This is just to say he is a huge inspiration to me. And that poem in particular is such an inspiration to me. Do you know that one by any chance?
I don't. No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can I read it? Is that allowed?
No,
we don't have the copyright.
Yes, correct. I can't. Someone did that once before and I had to edit it out. So
No, that's so fine. I thought I'd ask. But it's a very, very simple poem. It's almost like he wrote a little note to his significant other before he left for the day. And it's just so simple and beautifully written. And that was the first poem that I read that I said, poem doesn't need to be a series of abstractions and Shakespearean and complex in that way. And although it can be, and that's obviously very skillful and beautiful as well, I find myself attracted to poems that I can readily understand and relate to. Mm-hmm. They're a bit more approachable. So I think that was the first poem that might have even been, I don't know, when I was in middle school or something that just, got me into poetry.
Interesting. Yeah. One of the questions I always often ask poets is, How, and this should be really challenging for you, or maybe not, because you have such short sentences, but how do you decide when to break the line? Because a lot of these, you could assemble these and make them a little bit longer.
Yes.
And still have the same meaning and pretty similar rhythm, maybe. I don't know. Just curious.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think a lot of my line breaks, I try to make them double entendres if I can, but otherwise, I think I just write as I read it and I want to keep the pace moving. So I often just read it aloud and decide from there.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So you might change some things after you've read it aloud.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think
that's good.
I don't know. I'm not a slam poet by any means. I've actually never read my poems aloud.
You mean to publicly? Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
No, and I've been to many poetry readings and I've just never gotten up there because I think there are some poems that are written to be read and I don't know if mine necessarily are, but at the same time I want them to read in a fluid way, so I still read them aloud and make sure that they, you know, are conversational, I guess.
Well, you know, that just made me think one of the things that I have read in just, you know, just researching writing and not necessarily poetry, but is to always read your works aloud, you know, your chapter or whatever to yourself, not necessarily to somebody else, but just to kind of see how it sounds and see if you want to change it based on that.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know that we've actually ever really talked about that on the show. So I'm glad you.
I'm glad I brought up something new because, I do think I write poetry that is better read than spoken aloud, but I think that our brain still processes things better when it's in a way that we, you know, understand regardless of the medium.
I might have to try to read these aloud now and see if experiencing them any different, because I feel like they would work very well read aloud.
But yeah, and again, I think even when I'm writing, I hear, like, for example, it's not you, it's just that last word, like, it's just me. Like, there's something I hear the tones, I guess, as I'm
as
I'm reading it. I hear the spacing. I hear all of that even as I'm writing it. So I kind of write with that in mind, I guess.
That's great. So, okay, so you haven't read your poetry in public.
No.
And you said you don't have any formal creative writing, although obviously journalism, a lot of training in that. Do you participate in any kind of writing groups or poetry groups or anything?
I have over the years. I mean, in high school I did, in college I did. I've attended poetry readings here in Adelaide, Australia, but I've just never read them aloud, and I am not actively a part of a group necessarily, which is something that I do want to get involved in now that I finished this program that I mentioned before. That's something that I want to dedicate more time to because I do think it would be very, very beneficial.
Yeah.
But mostly I just kind of learn from books that I pick up at the library or bookstores and just kind of get my poetry education from there.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have any poetry books right now you'd recommend for our listeners?
Oh, I mean, that's a great question. This is Your Real Name by Elizabeth Morton. She's a New Zealand author. That's one that I just picked up from the library, and it is beautiful. I think that my lack of formal education in poetry is, in a way, beneficial to my poetry because I think I just write what I like, and it makes for much more approachable poetry, as I said,
as opposed to
trying to emulate Shakespeare or Walt Whitman, who, of course, are very talented, but probably different than my style. I think it allowed me to find my style faster because I was only writing what I read as opposed to what potentially my curriculum forced me to read, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure, sure. Well, and this class that you took, was it through a university or kind of like a writer's collective or something?
Yeah, it was a literary society at my college that actually my best friend founded, so shout out to Mike. And in high school, it was like an elective creative writing course.
But the one recently, you said you just finished one recently?
Oh, sorry. So that was not a writing collective. That was actually a creative advertising course. So still, creative, but
yeah, absolutely.
And there was writing involved, but no poetry, unfortunately.
Do you think this is a question I often ask, so listeners might get bored of it, but I'm always curious. So you're a writer professionally, and do you feel like that influences how you write, for your own personal enjoyment or creatively?
Yes. And I think in good ways and in bad ways. I think in good ways, my journalism training also helped me with concision in my poetry because in journalism, you have to be so straightforward. You have to get to the story, get to, the real core of the message. And I think that that's important to keep in mind when you're writing a poem. I personally don't want it to get too flowery, and that just isn't the style that I tend to like. So I think that training helped me with my style of poetry. But also, I think that oftentimes I'm kind of creatively tapped out when I come home at the end of the day.
Right.
So I think on work days, I don't really write. I do so more on the weekends. So I think that there are pros and cons to both,
being a
hobby writer and a paid writer.
right. So does that mean, you don't have a regular schedule for the creative side of writing where you're getting up at 5 a.m. or setting aside some time?
I know the morning pages and all of that is so, so important. So I'm going to try to implement that in my life. But also, I just in general haven't been writing as much lately because I've just been in a really happy place. And as I said, a lot of my work is inspired by those kind of sad emotions, and I haven't been feeling those as much lately, which of course is a great thing, and I don't want to manufacture them for the sake of poetry, but it has been influencing my writing in a negative way, so that is something I'm keeping in mind, and I'm trying to kind of diversify the writers that I read, because I tend to read Sylvia Plath, who isn't going to, uplift me necessarily.
Right. There's lots of stuff you could read to bring you down.
Yes, exactly. That's true. Actually, that's true, to inspire me. But I'm just trying to find kind of writers to emulate or be inspired by who write more about, happiness and dancing and the contentedness and love, which I'm experiencing right now. So, I'm kind of at a bit of a pivot point for my poetry. But yeah, it is interesting. And as I said, I don't put deadlines on myself. I'm not, you know, on anyone's timeline. So I can just take this time to really explore my new chapter in A, my life, and B, my writing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I did want to ask The Seamstress, is that then, because it's a collection kind of over your lifetime, does that have like a dark bent to it?
Yes. It definitely does. Okay. Definitely does. And a lot of The Seamstress was inspired by my move to Australia as well. And it's been interesting because I think most writers tend to be inspired by things that are new because we tend to forget the familiar and just overlook it. And now that I've moved here, I'm not only an expat to the US and I not only see that through a new lens, but I'm also a foreigner in my new country. So I just have kind of double the inspiration from two different countries now, two different cultures and ways of looking at things. And I mean, compared to other countries in the world, obviously the US and Australia aren't the most different, but there are a lot of nuances in the way people think about things and approach things and the writing style. So it's been really nice to draw on both of those. But The Seamstress did kind of, what was that initial realization that, you know, I'm kind of a expat in multiple ways. I'm a foreigner in really every way. So,
Well, and so did you self-publish that? How did you go through that process? Talk about that a little bit for our listeners.
Yes, I did self-publish that. And it was, a good, easy experience. But I think now that I'm writing my second book, I have a bit more of a mentor. And that's actually my partner's aunt. Her name's Annette Marner, and she is a beautiful poet. So she's another person I would really recommend. Women with Their Faces on Fire is one of her poetry books. She's written a beautiful novel, A New Name for the Color Blue. But she has kind of been my mentor in a lot of ways in the poetry world. She's the first professional poet that I think I've ever known. This has really just been a very isolated hobby for me. And so she was the person who said, you know, self-publishing is great, but maybe you should look at publishing in third parties, like, of course, Onyx. So thank you. And then from there, other publishers might want to look at your book. So I'm not sure whether or not I'll pursue that path, but it still just is nice, not only kind of building up my, I guess, poetry CV in this way, but also just getting to have conversations like this and actually being part of a community that I previously wasn't.
Well, so who's the first, does she read? Does she read a lot of your poetry?
She read my first book. She hasn't necessarily read any of my new work, which I will send to her. But yeah, she really loved The Seamstress and has put me in touch with some poetry professors, Jerry Kroll, who's actually from the US and now lives in Australia. She has just a great writer's group that she's kind of started to immerse me in. So that's really helpful. Yeah. And just knowing her, she's so brilliant and it's great.
Now, it is having writers who've kind of crossed that threshold into the, you know, professional world is just so helpful because they have so much knowledge to pass on because it really is a mystery for folks that are on the outside. It's just a big black box, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to get my poetry out to the world. So for me, self-publishing was a really good option at that time. But of course, now it means that I can't, you know, try to get those published anywhere else, which I would love to do because I think that they're, you know, some of them would speak to a lot of people in a nice way. But,
absolutely. Yeah. I support self-publishing. I think it's changed the industry. It's made the industry evolve a lot faster than it would have without it. And it's made, payments to writers way better because self-published writers who are successful.
Yeah.
And also the rates are
higher. Direct payments. Yeah. Yes. I think, I just wish that I had, I guess, submitted those poems elsewhere prior to self-publishing. I think the option to self-publish just kind of made me rush into it. I was like, you mean I can submit this right now? Like I'm going to do that. I wish that I'd just taken the time to also.
Well, you know, the flip side of that though, is if you do get yourself published by one of the big five or something, then you'll have this other book out there that if you sell your new book and people are looking for like, oh, you get this old one, then your revenue will be higher on the old one probably. And you'll get the marketing off the new one.
That's true.
There's a bright side for sure. All right. Well, we're definitely a little bit past time. And we always ask this question at the end. So I'm going to throw it out to you. Now that you've been writing poetry for over 10 years of your life, et cetera, share any piece of writing advice, maybe something that you would have preferred to have known when you started or something you've learned along the way that's been helpful to your experience.
Absolutely. Well, I think in addition to what I just said, which was get published where you can and definitely don't be afraid to submit places just to learn more about that experience and hopefully meet new people through that, like I am right now. I would also say, don't be afraid to explore stylistically. I think a lot of people in the art worlds, whether it's, you know, painting or sculpting or, of course, writing poetry, they tend to get stuck in having a style and they won't explore outside of that. And I think some of my best work is just experimental pieces and they still feel like me, even though they might not, you know, fit into what I would consider to be my style. I just think it restricts and limits your potential.
That's great. And you know, I think that's a new one. I don't think in all of our 50 shows we've ever had anyone say that. So, wow, you get a bonus, a gold star for that.
Oh my gosh. Well, good. Oh, yay. Yeah. I've had a few new things added to this podcast. So I'm very glad to do so.
All right, great. Well, Shar, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for coming on the show and most importantly, submitting your poetry, letting us share it with the world. And I'm looking forward to the next editions that you get out there and publish.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much again. This has been such a pleasure. And I can't wait to read the summer edition and the other poets that are involved.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. If so, please do us a huge favor and give us a rating on your favorite podcast app. Also, be sure to tell your writer friends. Ratings and word of mouth are our best tools for expanding the reach of the magazine and podcast. The Story Discovery Podcast is a free, narrated podcast of works that appear in Etched Onyx magazine. Edited by J.W. McAteer, all stories and poems are available at onyxpublications.com. That's onyxpublications.com. If you're feeling extra generous, you can support us at patreon.com/onyxpublications or buymeacoffee.com/onyxpublication with no S. As a nano publishing house, we are always looking for new works to showcase. If you'd like to submit a story or poems for consideration, please visit the submissions page on our website. In the meantime, keep reading and writing.